All right, hello and welcome to Great Things of Great Tech, episode 9. My name is Anthony Spiteri, and this podcast is all about highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. And this episode, I'm really stoked to have Tim Brewer, the co-founder and CEO at Functionally. Welcome, Tim.
It's great to be here. Good to see you, Anthony.
Awesome, Tim. All right, then. So just before we get into the show and chatting about Functionally and Tim, if you love this show, Great Things with Great Tech, and would like to feature on future episodes, you can click the link in the show notes or go to gtwgt.com and also go to your favorite podcast station. We're on all the podcasts now, Tim, like all the platforms out there, leveraged through Anchor, which is a great tech company in itself, and obviously through YouTube. So if you like the show, please subscribe and you will get all the great episodes that are upcoming on Great Things with Great Tech. So, with that out of the way, Tim, let's have a chat here about Functionally. And I think just to kick it off, this is my first true startup on this show, right? So I'm really excited about having a startup on the show doing great things with great technology. So just to level set, can you just quickly introduce Functionally and tell the guys out there what Functionally is doing, problems they're solving, and what it's all about?
Yeah, absolutely. So Functionally is, in today's format, it's an intelligent org chart. We've all worked in companies, and I know you and I have worked together historically. And when companies get bigger than 30 to 50 people, they're really hard. It is really hard work to help them organize around the mission of the organization. And that gets even more difficult as changes required more often. And taking today's example or this year's example with COVID, companies need to constantly be rethinking how do we structure around the mission of our company and what we're delivering, and how we make sure we're the right size and the right structure for the job we need to get done. Today, that's really difficult to execute on. It takes a huge amount of effort. There's no specific tools that help companies lead through those changes. There's different tools and drawing tools and stuff like that. Nothing that's custom around that. And at a big size, once you're 500 or 1,000 people, the only real answer is to go and call a institutional consulting firm like Boston Consulting Group or Deloitte and pay them millions of dollars to come in and run through a process with you. And so we're building a tool for CEOs and leaders within organizations to help them effectively lead change and get the right structure for their organization to make their winning moves.
Okay, so this is all about organizational design. So effectively, you know, you're talking to CEOs and you're trying to enable, I guess, their organization lead or HR teams to better structure an organization for growth. Is that pretty much what it's doing?
Yeah, you know what? We talked to a lot of CEOs and they've always just assumed that HR has these tools to hand. But the reality is they actually don't have anything in play to really help the organization structure effectively. And I'll tell you what, part of the reason why that is difficult is that there is no perfect structure for an organization. An organization is a series of trade-offs. Certainly, structure is not just about the org chart. So you have a traditional org chart, who reports to who, which is important, but you also have what do people do? Who does what in our organization?
Okay.
And are all the things that we're doing, are they the right things that we're doing? And do we have enough resource working on those things to be successful, or the right resource to be working on those things? And so you can imagine when you've got, you know, 50 to 500 people, that becomes really, really complex. Yeah. For most organizations, something that they need a lot of help to execute on.
Yeah, right.
I think one of the cool things that we've found is once we can help an organization think through those dimensions at work, they start self-organizing and having conversations that matter, less arguments in the boardroom about who should report to who and, you know, those kinds of things that you get. And then at the detail level, you know, people end up with clarity in their role. It's a little bit more than, coming back to the comment you made about org design, it's a little bit more than just org design then. And there is a concept that a lot of researchers work with called work design. okay. which is org design coming together with team and role design. So thinking not just about the structure of an organization, but each of the roles that exist within that structure. And so we try and tackle all three, and ultimately are building tools and a platform to help leaders navigate those changes in a way that they may not have thought was possible before we had the kind of advent of the kind of web app and web technology tools that we have today to play with.
Yeah, right. So this is a space that has only become possible because of the technology that exists today. And I want to touch on a lot of that, you know, the SaaS-based way that you're going about things and technology behind it as well, because I think that's pretty interesting. But how do you get yourself to a point where you're now CEO and co-founder of the SaaS-based company? You've had a really interesting journey yourself. So I think for a little bit of a change on this show, it's just a chat about how, you know, you become a guy from WA, from Perth, like myself. We live pretty close to each other now. In fact, we probably could have done this in person, really. But, you know, just the logistics and whatnot make it ironically quite difficult. But, you know, you grew up in Perth. You were a surfer. I know that you love surfing. You then made your way through to a few different interesting roles. We started to work together in, you know, 2009 to 2012. And then you went to the States. But just backfill that a little bit into how you developed into a position now where you're leading this company.
Yeah, well, maybe I'll rewind. I definitely have had a really interesting career that's probably headlined by the fact that I've done things that I'm genuinely interested in and get energy from. So I originally started working at a surf shop in my late teens, did some study and ended up getting a job at a local high school here called Ocean Reef Senior High School. Yeah. Worked there for 5 years. I did a stint in local government as a local government councillor, so as an elected member, which is a whole nother conversation over a beer. It was an incredible ride. I got a great appreciation for people in politics. It is a really hard and hard job to persist through. I then went to Chaplaincy's head office, an organization called Youth Care here in Western Australia. Chaplaincy, just for global context, is probably more akin to youth working here. So it's effectively church sponsored or church organization sponsored youth work in high schools and primary schools here in Western Australia. I was in a high school. So I went to head office as they went through some pretty transformational change. They had no technology at all, and we went from kind of a computer and a dial-up connection through to having kind of an infrastructure that enabled all of the organization to communicate in real time with each other and track its movements, which was very, very important. We finished that, and a friend of mine, I actually went and studied my MBA in there. So I did a bit of study over that. It just sounds easy to say, but it was a huge amount of work. Yeah. And then a friend of mine,
you and I have both done kind of non-undergrad sort of MBA / master's degrees. And it's while we've been working, right? So it is a challenge. Yes. Believe me, I know that. Yeah.
with young, you know, it's similar to you with young family. I think probably at this point, we should probably give some context to Western Australia. And maybe you do this on the show before. Western Australia is like having America. So the United States of America, and on the West Coast of America, only having San Diego.
I was going to say San Diego, similar temperature. Yeah.
Similar temperature, similar size. Everyone is reasonably laid back. But imagine having no other major cities on the Western seaboard, and maybe nothing greater than 50,000 people. So like San Luis Obispo. So we want a San Luis equivalent, but there's nothing else there. So it's very, very remote, city. You've got to fly everywhere to get work done until this year, where the world has become instantly flat from a business perspective. And even though we're close, we can get a lot of business done. So at that point, I had a friend who was running a small IT firm, Stephen Crockett, who you know well. And I kind of went across to help him there and eventually became his partner. We then merged in with another firm called Accord Technologies and then sold in 2010-11 to Anatel, which was a reverse listing of service IT service companies. And so we went from grew this company that I started about 10 or 14 people. And then we kind of exited at 50 people. So we grew pretty nicely. At that time, we got to know each other because you were one of our key team members there, looking after infrastructure and hosting, which was great fun. We had a lot of good times.
Cowboy days almost, right? But I think that's interesting, right? Because that, again, to me, what I'm hearing through your experiences, even in youth care and transformational change, all the way through Crocs and Accord, which was, a small company, grew quite successfully, did really well, started getting awards, and then obviously came on the radar from an acquisition point of view, and then got reverse listed, acquired with a bunch of other companies. All of a sudden, for yourself as a director, now you're thrust into this sort of, I guess, bigger company. I think at the time, 200 plus people, and you were kind of thrown into the deep end in terms of trying to work out how to make this thing work. And I think you had quite a few people underneath you, right? I mean, effectively, you were responsible for the whole organization, effectively, right?
I was definitely was not the whole organization. I was responsible for integration initially. And had
just
a
challenging
three quarters of the organization's team. Now, I'm not an engineer, so it's kind of I'm a bit nervous actually being on it. I know you are like the engineer's engineer in terms of infrastructure, but I'm not going to call myself non-technical because I actually really enjoy sitting and learning about infrastructure and engineering, but yeah. I'm predominantly not technical and was leading a very, very big technology organization through massive change. We had 17 locations and there were five different companies had come together over that year.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of people leadership to do, a lot of acknowledging the effort it requires to lead that scale of change. But I did learn a massive amount about how to think about structure, particularly in a service organization where you're thinking in FTE, you're thinking in how many hours and output and efficiency and effectiveness. That becomes in a moving environment across so many locations. Became a really interesting challenge. Fortunately, had a really great team, so I got to learn a lot off them. But also, it's a really great learning experience, and I got to see a lot of the challenges of how difficult it is to lead change within an organization.
Yeah,
which is great.
Can I say the flip side to that as well? Like, being on the other side of that, I knew that when you go from a small company, like I started even back in my old days before I joined Accord, and then what was Anatel, you're working with 9 people, 15 people, and then you go to 50. I thought that was pretty big. And then you flip on to 200. And now I work for an organization that's like, when I started it was 2,000, but we've doubled in half that. So sort of 4,500.
Wow.
There's challenges in understanding what, like you were saying, what do people do? What do I do? Where do I fit in the organization? Technically, what does this guy do? And are there people doing the similar jobs to me? What's your role? So I'm starting to really get an appreciation as to why this space that functionally sits in kind of exists, right? So the story that we're building here is leading to this idea in your head. So yeah, just work us through. Now that you've done this, you've made the decision now to sort of, I guess, take the family and go to America in 2013. And you ended up working with some pretty cool companies. Like, ended up working with Dropbox, doing some stuff there. And just talk a little bit about that and how that came about. I think that's an interesting story. And then I guess what that led into you to do is become an advisor to a lot of startups, I guess both locally and but predominantly like in that Valley area. And then I guess that then fueled the growth toward functionally. But let's just chat a little bit about that because I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So the plan was to move to the US and spend a year there. We had wanted to do that for a long time. And I especially did enjoy software. So I wouldn't say that it feels like we landed on our feet there, and for me and my experience landed on our feet, but I really just wanted to go there and learn. We wanted to have a bit of a break, so it was a bit of a gap year in what I was doing, and just wanted to transition well. So we landed in the ground and pretty quickly was introduced to an opportunity at Dropbox. I didn't think the meeting went super well. We drove up to San Francisco to meet the team. Yeah. And 2 weeks later they called and said, "Oh, we've met a bunch of different people, but we really like you. Can you, you know, come and spend some time helping us launch the global channel program. Now, at the time, Dropbox was only about 260 people.
Yeah.
So it was a very, very big brand new office they had just moved into. They just raised a fair amount of money. And they grew over the 16 months I got to work with them. They grew from 260 people to about 1,400 people in that period of time, which was like 7X, mental.
Yeah, huge.
I also had no real, like, I didn't target that particular company. I was just there. I had a series of things that I wanted to do in that year. I was pretty ordered in how I wanted to think about that. And I was just very, very lucky. I think it was a really incredible accident that I ended up working there and have lifelong friends from that experience as well. It taught me a lot about software, scaling organizations, a whole heap of different things. So, and the US in a whole was a great year, both for our family as well as for the things that I wanted to learn about software and where I thought the opportunity globally for tech was really evolving at a pretty rapid rate, which is things moving from physical processes to leverage the advantages of what you could do with database and code.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we've had conversations before, and I've just been triggered into a conversation that we had talked about, where you said a lot of it's about data, right? The data that's created, that effectively is the value in software, effectively, right? And maybe we'll touch on that with regards to functionally a little bit later on, because I think that's ultimately what you're creating there as well. So then, you know, that's 2013. I guess over the next 3 or 4 years, you're kind of advising and on different different companies, trying to help them, you know, get together. And then I think maybe 2016-17, you were kind of brought in to do, I guess, what functionally does, but do it manually. Every great innovative technology company, I think, there's a manual side to it because there's a problem that's trying to be solved first. So you have to go through it manually. It's the first step of automation, right? It's to do it manually, then see how you can automate the process. How do you make it repeatable? So maybe just talk about that, about how you effectively did functionally, but manually.
Yeah. You know what? The most common way people articulate that they have an alignment problem or a resourcing problem or a structure problem in their organization is two things. One is they'll say we have, like, we don't know what anyone does and we feel like we've got this kind of problem with our organization and it's coming out as some kind of pain. And it can get very painful, you know, fighting executives, huge misalignment, not achieving the organization's targets or delivering poor product. There's a whole heap of things that can be structure related because so much of it, an organization's output's got to do with the resources that exist within it and how they order. The other thing that I would get asked a lot of is, we need job descriptions, we think. We don't know what anyone does. We've grown heaps now with, you know, 30 or 50 or 100 people. And all of our team are saying that they don't have clarity in their role. And so I would decline any offers or requests to do any kind of project work like that. I did not want to write job descriptions. I felt like that's... No, we've never met anyone actually that really loves writing job descriptions. But felt like that's not something I want to do. So I declined a request to do that. And they came back and said, look, if you were going to do it, how would you do it? And I was like, well, good question. I would probably, you know, map out all the things the organization needs to do and then work out who currently does it and then work out if that makes sense. And the process that I ran through, which was one of the kind of moments as this thing would progress, they ended up getting to a point where I stopped my kind of advisory consulting work and they started self-organizing. Okay. I found that massively interesting that they would, whatever we had done was enough for them to feel like, oh, this isn't firstly logical how we're currently structured and we can come up, now we have this information, this knowledge, this data, we can come up with a better way of structuring. I found that awesome. I didn't really need to be the guy that was giving advice.
Yeah. So you set a framework almost, which they basically were able to repeat effectively. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that it got to a point where it felt natural for them in the way they thought about the problem.
Yeah.
And remembering this, you know, what you do and all the different things you do inside of this, your organization, 4,500 people, that's like an insane amount of complexity. And our brains just aren't built to deal with that kind of complexity. The second thing, it's a huge amount of effort to gather that data. So it took kind of 3 months to go through that mapping exercise and meet with a whole heap of different people and work out what they did. And so fast forward a couple of years after that, I'd been asked over and over to do that same thing. And I was sitting at an event in San Francisco, a SASTRA event actually. We do love the team at SASTRA, and if you're in software, yeah, they're a great community.
Happen recently again? Was that event?
Yeah, they just had SASTRA, SASTRA Home, which is a or SASTRA at Home. So their yeah, conference ran, and you could attend via home, which is actually fantastic content. A lot of content's out on YouTube, but they're a really good team. They've built an incredible community of people building and learning from each other around software as a service. So I was at that event. I had a team member from Comcast Ventures come up, and he was just standing next to me. I didn't really know where he was from. He's like, "Oh, what do you do?" And I'm like, "Oh," at the time I was investing a little bit, like angel investing. I didn't have enough cash to just do that as my full-time job. Yeah, someone called me a kind of full-time angel, but have invested in a few companies over time. And he said, "What do you do?" I said, "Oh, I do a little bit of advisory. I sit on a few boards," which I had, from relationships I built in the US, had kept some roles in the US. So I traveled back and forth to US a fair bit. And he said, "What do you do the most, bud? Like, what's the most interesting to you?" And I'm like, "Oh, I get this thing that I keep getting asked to do to help, you know, companies flesh out and get structured correctly." He's like, "Oh, tell me about that." And I told him about some of the process. He's like, "That is super interesting." Mm-hmm. And his background was actually, he was at Yammer as they grew and sold to Microsoft. And yeah, after that, he then went to Zenefits, where they grew to about 500 people in a pretty interesting role that got to see a lot of that growth. And he's like, "I actually think that's pretty interesting." And at the same time, one of the companies that I'd run the process for had built a prototype. And between those two things, that caused me to think about, well, I don't think it should be software, because they kind of suggested that maybe it's a product. I said, "Oh, I don't think it should be." I had reasons for that. But I went and started trying to kill the idea or work through. Life was great. I didn't want to be, I didn't have a romantic view of what it being a software CEO looked like. I definitely didn't have some inbuilt need to be the kind of
Had you met your co-founder yet? Was that?
No, I had not. And so I spent about 6 months, and I just talked to people. So I just fleshed the idea out enough, and I knew, really not the idea, the problem. I didn't have a prototype at the time, and I would just sit with people and say, "Hey, I think this is a problem." And would work through it kind of in that way. And then at the end of that year, I actually took the idea to Startup Weekend and went, "Hey, this is the problem people have." And we just literally took it through Startup Weekend, pitched at the end of the weekend. If you've ever been to Startup Weekend, they're a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You can't really have a prototype or anything fleshed out. And that's what we had, apart from an idea for a name. That was kind of the turning point where we went from like, "Okay, I need to properly kill this." And that takes us from 17 to 18, when I did actually have a guy, Damien, who I had invested in. And there was four things that in my mind needed to be done before we decided if this was a go or no go.
Yep.
One is an epic product co-founder. Uh-huh. And Damien had built out a product called Team Line on Slack. It's got about 4.5
What's Damien's surname?
Bramanis, Damien Bramanis.
Yep.
Yeah, one really. Guy. both B and R surname.
Yeah.
Yep, funny. His first name started with T. So co-founder and Damien, we had a team come together to work on the original prototype. We sold to someone I didn't know, which was one of our tests. Like, it's easy to sell people that you know or that like you, but to find someone we didn't know. And we raised a small angel round of funding to build the first kind of alpha product and take it to market.
And this is 2019?
This is 2018. 2019, we launched in February at SASTRA conference, actually, because it was we chose that because we could get to a lot of people very quickly.
Yep, makes sense.
And we launched, so to take kind of quickly through the evolution of the product, we can talk a bit more about where we're at today. We launched a product, spent 6 months implementing that with people. It was not a product-led, so you couldn't self-service the product. It was alongside a consultant. We
just explain that a little bit. So it wasn't product led. Yeah. So that means that there was checks and balances that needed to be done along the way to get it to a state where a company could leverage it. So it wasn't as such a SaaS-based click here it is offering at that point.
It was definitely software as a service, but it wasn't, we call it product-led growth. So the time to value was long and the investment you needed up front
Get
was
it.
Heavy.
Okay, yeah.
So you could have, it could have become a great product for consultants, but what we wanted to build is a product for to empower and help leaders self-organize.
Yep, I get you.
And so but the 6 months of learning it, we learned a lot of stuff which we couldn't have learned without a product. We then took that learning and built a prototype in October for it, which all the customers had told us they wanted. So we were building this kind of huge thing, and actually what they all said is like, oh, I'd really like this to be in a drag and drop org chart that helps me visualize, tell a story to my other executives. And so we built a prototype for that. That went really well. And then we took that to in February this year, we took that real early product to market and then launched that officially in May. Launched trialable product in May
for
people to buy straight off our website.
Yeah.
It went self-service in June. So we assist with the implementation, and we have about 30 people on that product now and get inquiries. Our first 10 people that signed up that we didn't know who they were was Egypt, London, Canada, East and West Coast of the US and East and West Coast of Australia. So it really, from day one, was a global product.
Global. That's the power of software, right? Power of software, the power of the internet, the power of the delivery mechanism that is the internet, right? So just quickly what did you guys, we'll talk a little bit of tech. So what did you guys build it up on initially when you launched? Like what platform was it?
Really good. Like firstly, I'm not the technical co-founder. So for all of those people listening, you guys are hardcore engineers. I'm just asking your forgiveness right now if I say something.
You'll be okay, dish.
It's because I don't need to mention that. So we're on the AWS platform. We build on top of Heroku just for speed. So we want to focus our very limited energy as a startup and a startup that is not sustainable yet on accretive value for the customer. And what you host on, unless you're a hosting company or a database company or something that has your unique proposition is your infrastructure, our job is to spend as little time as possible on that.
Yeah.
And so we spend maximum time on trying to build features that increment us towards a really unique, superior product in market compared to any alternatives our customers might have.
Yeah.
And so things like infrastructure or billing process, we're like, hey, we're just going to go with Stripe and we're just going to spend as little time on that as possible. Let's focus on the customer.
Yeah.
And that has been our choice all the way along. We've rebuilt the product itself 3 times. So the original proof of concept sale, we built some code, threw that out, rebuilt in early 2019, and now we're on the next version. And we're now transitioning incrementally because we're getting so many customers on the current platform across to a more robust kind of code base and something that's more scalable and we're able over time to take to be a proper platform.
They know what, Tim, like intrinsically speaking, this is the definition of someone doing great things with great tech, because you know what you guys are good at. Okay, you know what you're maniacally focused on what you want to achieve through the product. You know, you're product led. You don't want to spend time dealing with the nuances of the hosting, you know, the all that kind of management of that platform, which can, number one, it's complex. Number two, it costs money, you know, from the point of view of hiring the right people. So you've put together a team, and you know, I'm assuming you guys have got some devs. You got your structure in place to be able to push this out through another provider that handles the tech side of it without you guys having to really spend time, money or effort. So you mentioned Stripe, and I actually just got to learning about Stripe, would you believe, a couple of months ago, understanding that technology and what that does. You know, so again, you say you're not interested in billing, you're not interested in the hosting. So you're leveraging AWS for your hosting, Stripe for the billing, putting it all together. The devs do a great job of uploading the code and it just kind of works. I think you still have to think about scale. So you'll be working with your third party provider to help, you know, understand if this thing gets bigger, how do we then scale the technology to make sure that it is functional at scale for, you know, if we start to go great guns and we start to get, you know, 10x, you know, customer acquisition, how do we make it work? So it's still going to give you the right experience. But again, this is why I think I'm talking to you about, you know, a SaaS company doing stuff with great things, with great tech. Just let's talk a little bit though about, you know, the actual startup. So I got interested in this because I remember seeing something on it. Maybe it was Facebook or LinkedIn, where you guys, you had a launch party for Functionally in your garage in Ocean Reef. So talk us a little bit about that, because I think that's, it's a great sort of feel. And you know, you could feel that there was a family together coming together to do something great. So just talk a little bit about, you know, that launch and how that came.
Yeah. Well, it was in kind of April 2018. So this is the time where I had a co-founder, but we didn't have a customer that we could sell to yet. But we had a small group of people interested in what we were building. And I think, you know, we're enabled to build the software we are in a web platform to work real time, to collaborate, things like that, things that Figma are leveraging, Miro are leveraging. But you've got to do that. A huge part of the enjoyment of that process, as well as what makes you successful, is having the right team around you. And so we had a barbecue at our place, and we did a little launch event in my garage. It's a little bit kind of tongue in cheek, because, you know, companies launching garages, or that have that as their first office. So we literally kind of rolled up the garage doors and had our friends over, and it was kind of the creating moments for the team. I see is really important, and one of the things, as you know, that I both enjoy doing and feel is very important for a company is having a really high quality team around you. So we had the team together and did the launch, and we continue to think often about how do we create moments, like a family thinks about creating these kind of moments to remember in their family journey, you know, Christmas and Easter and Thanksgiving, if you, depending on the country you're in. We think about doing that with the team. So when we get the team together, creating these memories and moments.
Culture is so important.
Burn in our culture, absolutely.
Yeah, cool. So
yeah, I actually had, I've got this little MacBook, and we even had that on the table. It wasn't even operating, but we had like Damien typing on it as I was.
So you're trying to say that was kind of staged. You're kind of throwing, you know, a bit of cloud on all these great startup companies that have, you know, started in garages. You know, like, was it, did they really start in the garage? You know, but no, I think from what I get, the culture was important, and you know, trying to start the culture being correct from the outright. That's what it came down to.
I think it's great technology, great teams, and maniacally focusing on your customer. We've got a certain, as a startup, you get a certain number of bets you can make.
Yeah.
And so our job is just to maximize each of those bets, and this is our method for doing that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I've observed, kind of pattern matching from other great founders I've got to watch over the years, grow and build their companies. And so we're just putting as many bets in front of our customers as it relates to kind of creating something superior and ultimately super valuable for them, and the rest can take care of itself.
Yeah, that's awesome. So just quickly, just one of the last things, time, I told you time would run out really quick, didn't I?
Absolutely.
We'd get through this. But so you've already had like a rebranding in your short period of time. And it was an interesting rebranding when I came across it, from Functionally to Functionally. Just explain how that comes to be and why branding is so important when you're trying to create a great tech product.
Yeah. Well, look, firstly, you talked about it before. Like, what we learned is that to have a really scalable product, you've got to have the product be able to be found as easily and frictionlessly as possible, and for people to be able to get to a feeling value or delivering value to a customer as fast as possible. And so the two things for us is around both of those things. You don't really know until you get your product in front of someone. And so for the product, it was around time to value, which we changed. And for the branding, about 5 out of 10 people would say functionality. And it was like a bit of a mouthful. And we eventually sat down with someone that was pretty clever. Actually, they helped lead the launch of the iPod in the US. And we're just showing them what we're working on. They restructure teams as part of their job. So we're getting some feedback. And they said, why haven't you got the phonetic spelling of the company's name? Why
hey, just quickly, that? Are those the same guys that helped Spotify?
We do get asked about Spotify structure a lot.
Yeah,
because teams are trying to work out better ways to for this, you know, Spotify model of structuring your product.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking because the guy that designed the iPod, I know that there was a company going around that did help with branding, and I thought maybe it was the same ones. Oh no,
they don't actually specialize in branding. They actually specialize in strategy.
Maybe it was Sonos that I was thinking about. Maybe it was Sonos. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah. No problem at all. So it was just a comment. Honestly, we were interviewing them around our product, and it was just this throwaway comment. And we had talked about it at length when we originally branded. We branded very quick. We were like, hey, let's just get a name up. We're going to launch in a month. We put website up the day our product launched at SASTA. And we just put maximum effort into talking to as many people as we possibly can. And that's probably the lesson. Like, you talk to enough people, you're going to learn a bunch of stuff, and you're going to able to iterate. And we actually have a new website coming out with a bunch of those learnings kind of encapsulated in about 30 days. So, it was just about taking the friction out of the process. And that's what we did. And we tried to do it with minimum cost, minimum effort, which was just, hey, we're renaming. And everyone's like, oh, that's the same name, just a different spelling.
Yeah. That's exactly what it was. Yeah. And I think also, like, I'm going to link to this in the show notes as well. I think the marketing is becoming on point for you. You released a great video, which I think I commented on LinkedIn. It just really captured the essence of what the company was about. And even for me that didn't, you know specific, well, didn't know 100% what it was, after watching that video, seeing the drag and drop of the org chart, and, you know, that I got it. And I think that's a bit of brilliance as well. So kudos to, you know, whoever kind of came up with that sort of idea. And we'll link to it to show you, because I think it shows exactly what the company does. It's got a bit of humor, a bit of comedy, and it just kind of lends itself really well to the technology that you guys are trying to put through. All right, so let's start to wrap up. I always want to ask these couple of questions at the end of it. So, and I think to some extent you've answered this already, but how did you disrupt the market? Like, there was obviously a space to be filled, and you filled it, but how do you feel you're able to disrupt this market and now ultimately start to try and become successful in it?
Yeah. Look, there's a lot of products that have built very complex solutions that do everything an industry needs. There was a lot of Facebooks before Facebook. Facebook's secret was finding the thin edge of the wedge and actually not building too much, I believe. So the first thing is getting to market with a product that is really easy to use, that customers love, and solves a unique problem. And that's what we're working on right now. And then building the things that make, in a customer's mind, make the product heavier and harder to use, but might build out, say, platform, or might build out a unique data set. The first thing, we disrupt the market by being that first product, like that thin edge of the wedge and creating value very, very quickly. At the long run, we win by knowing that there is a market where people are paying millions of dollars to have someone like Deloitte, BCG, or Accenture lead them through this process, and believing that software can provide a better, higher efficacy way for an individual to lead that in their own organization. Yeah. They often know more about their org. And then building out a really unique data set under all of that, that further assists or flywheels into the process of making decisions around who does what in an organization, how you resource that, and how much that costs. And so they're the things ultimately that we think about, we need to bring together to be disruptive.
Awesome. So with that, how are you going to look to continually, I mean, you've talked a little bit about in terms of trying to get the interface right, you know, go on that flywheel, but how are you continue to internally disrupt yourself in the future? Because this is a shifting thing. You've created a new, from my end, you've created a new market segment leveraging SaaS-based technology. So how are you going to continually disrupt yourself to be better at what you do moving forward?
Yeah, we have a pretty solid rhythm that every quarter we improve. So we every quarter sit down and review the goals we set for ourselves for the quarter and the actions that we took. And we rate those actions, we share it with the entire team, and then we reset what we're working on the following quarter. And then next quarter, we're improving our rhythm, like how that occurs, so that we're able to focus on less things than more and be really successful at those things. So, and we're not afraid to change the structure and resource allotment we put into that to get it done. So we use functionally ourselves in helping us to think about the most effective way to structure our team and leverage leverage the, you know, incredible skills that we've got across our team members.
Awesome, mate. No worries. So for those that might have heard through the microphone, there was a little bit of a beeping noise. That was our beep to say that the 40 minutes is up for the show. I like to keep these, you know, Zoom 40 minutes. It's a great way to basically keep the show under wraps. We could talk for hours, right? It's really, yeah, definitely we'll could talk for hours. But look, I think this is really good. Thank you for joining me on the show. Thank you for being my first SaaS-based company and real sort of startup. We didn't even talk about, you know, the fact that you just got a bit more investment locally through the local government here. You won a grant, didn't you? Actually, 1 minute quickly, talk about that, because I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, look, we were in the middle of raising around as COVID hit. A third of that fell over, and in the space of a few short weeks, we were able to test our new product with about 36 different people. The results were pretty incredible.
Yeah.
We doubled down on applying for a federal government grant, and between the grant and an investment round, we raised another kind of circa $1 million US post-COVID,
yeah,
which was, you know, if you kind of look at the early rounds raised today, it's like pretty mental that we were even able to get that off. There's plenty of moments where I thought we would not be successful at that, but between the team's effort and what we were doing in product, we're lucky enough to continue to get the backing of our investors and some new investors in seeing this problem solved through software. So
awesome.
Yeah, very, very lucky, pretty crazy, and gives us kind of a good amount of runway to focus on the next steps in product.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to seeing how that ends up. Guys, I'm going to put the show now. It's all about Functionally. Thanks, Tim. So just as a reminder, you can find me, anthonyspiteri.net. You can find the podcast at GTWGTpodcast and GTWGT.com. If you aren't subscribed, please subscribe. We want to get more subscribers as possible. And, you know, thanks, Tim. Thanks to everybody. And we will catch you next time on Great Things with Great Tech. Thank you. Right. Oof, that went quick. Always goes quick.
<Did. laughs>